So we don't have anywhere specifically to turn this morning, so just be ready. We're going to continue in our study of famous quotes, and this morning our famous quote is possibly one of the most well-known quotes in our country's history. If you remember Martin Luther King Jr., on August the 28th, 1963, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, as he was giving a speech between 250,000 people who had gathered together in a civil rights movement called the March on Washington. And he gave this speech, and at the end of it, in response to a singer, I don't know how to say her name, her last name is Jackson. Anyway, she had cried out for him to share his dream. And from that, he began and or ended that speech with saying, "I have a dream. I have a dream," and he was talking about equality. He was talking about freedom, a freedom from a past of this country that was kind of a, not kind of, it was a dark part of our country's history. And he's saying, "I have a dream." And he wasn't literally saying, "I had fallen asleep and I had this vision," but he was saying that I have a strong emotion, a something that I want to see happen in this country, something different than the way it is right now. And so what he was saying is, "I want to see change. I want to see something, a better place than we have right now." Now, I'm in no way this morning embracing everything politically and all of that. I wanted to key in on just that phrase, how much that phrase has influenced many people around the world. "I have a dream." How many times have you heard that? How many times have you heard someone say, "This is my dream. This is what I dream about. This is what I would love to see happen. These are the things that are important to me." And that's the reality of what he's saying. "I have a dream." So it's not actually a dream, as we would say, when we wake up in the morning, but a passionate desire for a different reality. "I have a dream." And we start looking in the Bible, and all through the Old Testament and New Testament talks about men and women having dreams or visions. And those dreams and visions originated with God. And a lot of times as we look at many of those visions or those dreams and we read about them and we look at those men and those women and we try to grasp or understand, it's a little easier for us today than it was for them, but they just didn't really understand exactly what God wanted from them. And so they struggled with some of those things. Sometimes they knew because it was pretty simple. In Genesis chapter 20, we see Abraham and he meets Abimelech and this king, and he's afraid because he has his wife Sarah as one of the most beautiful women who's ever lived, and he says, "Surely he's going to kill me and everyone else if I don't say she's my sister." And so he does that, and Abimelech takes her, and God comes to him in a dream and he says, "You've done wrong, and I'm going to take your life for what you've done." Now, God made it really clear in that dream or in that vision that Abimelech had that what he had done to take Sarah was wrong, and that he took Sarah back and he said, "Here," and he offered all these gifts to Abraham, and he said, "I don't know why you did it, but here she is back. I don't want her. And here's a whole bunch of other stuff. Now get her out of here." But God gave him a vision, this king, not to do what he was about to do and take her for his wife. Genesis chapter 28 is a dream or a vision that we've talked about. I'm sure if you've been in Bible class at all in your life, you've covered this. I know in college we spent a couple of days in one of our Bible classes talking about this. I thought it was a little silly, but whether this was actual a ladder or a staircase in Jacob's dream, and he sees the angels ascending and descending as God is renewing that promise with Jacob. Jacob, as he had with Abraham. He's talking about the promises. And in that dream, and he's laying it all out, and Abraham didn't really grasp it. Jacob doesn't grasp it. Isaac didn't. And no one else for many, many years is going to fully comprehend what God was trying to give to him in this dream or in this vision. But God is trying to lay out the future. He's trying to bring about a reality to them that's far greater, exceeds anything that they can imagine. And he's doing it through these visions or dreams. In Genesis chapter 31, Jacob's dream he has about Laban, his father-in-law. God is speaking to him, says, get away from him. Here's what I want you to do. These are the things that I need you to do. And we go on. And then Genesis chapter 37, a dream comes to Joseph. And you remember those stories. I love it. And you read it and you think, here's this young boy. And he tells his brothers all about his dreams. And what did his brothers think about it? Oh, how great. We're so happy you're going to be more powerful than us. We're so happy that we're going to bow down before you one day. And I can just see Joseph and maybe gloating a little bit because he's the one who's always left behind. He's the one who did the rest of his family, his brothers don't want him around, any of those things. And so God gives him this vision and he's maybe putting his own little spin on it, right? He's saying, look, y'all are all bowing before me in a dream. And maybe it makes him a little bit confident. And he's enjoying it a little bit too much. And if you have older siblings, you know that any time you made a competition with them, how much did they like that? Especially if you're able to beat them at something. But to tell them you're better didn't go over well. And so here are all of these dreams, and we could just keep talking about dreams and visions, but the reality is God sometimes revealed something to His followers that they didn't fully comprehend. Sometimes they got it, but a lot of times they didn't understand. And Joseph didn't understand. And his father, Jacob, didn't understand. And his brothers didn't understand. The dream is still there. And so they take Joseph and they throw him into a pit and they lie to their father and they say that he's dead and they sell him into slavery and he goes in and he starts getting things back on track and then he's put in prison and things, bad things happen and good things happen and he goes through his life until one day the dream that he was having, the dream that God gave him, comes to fruition. And he sees his brothers come in and he knows who they are and he watches them walk up and bow down before him and he remembers his dream. And it's like all of a sudden God is finally telling him what his dream was all about. Now he still doesn't completely and totally understand it, but it's starting to make sense. And you know, multiple times they go home and they come back. They bring Benjamin, and all these things are happening. And then he says, no, you're going to leave him. And their argument starts, and then finally it clicks, and he reveals himself to them, and he says, I get it. And he's trying to explain to them, do you remember the dream that I had? Do you remember when he revealed, I'm your brother? Do you remember when I had that dream? God is the one who gave me that dream. I didn't come up with it. God is the one who gave me that dream. God is the one who sent me before you to preserve you, a remnant in the earth, he said, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me, but it was God. And he said, the dream that I had was God's dream, not mine. And it took me a while. I had to struggle with it, brothers. I lived through all of these things and when you sold me and I was in prison and I had to do all of these things in a foreign country and I didn't understand it, God has finally revealed the truth of the dream and I'm going to tell you it was His for us, not mine. God is working things out. Sometimes God has to shake us awake and help us to realize just how ignorant we are of His plans. Sometimes we don't understand what God is wanting. Sometimes God has to give us a dream or a vision. And now I'm not talking about He does this literally today. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. But sometimes God has to wake us up. Sometimes God has to shake us and say, you don't get it. You're not understanding what I want you to understand. You don't grasp what I'm trying to get you to understand. The reality is not what you think it is. And so, finally, looking into the eyes of helpless, starving brothers, Joseph understood what his dream was all about. God finally in the middle of chaos, opened up his eyes and allowed him to see. And sometimes we have to open up our eyes in the middle of maybe seemingly chaos for God to help us grasp what exactly it is that we're about. If we were to fast forward to the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 9, we know the church has been established. And Saul is going about and he's persecuting the church and he's throwing people in prison. He's putting people to death. He's doing all of these things. And God has already planned a plan for Saul. And as a matter of fact, he stops him in his travels and he shakes him a little bit and he says, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he wants to know, "Who are you, Lord?" And he tells him, "I am Jesus, the Lord, the one whom you're persecuting." And when all of this is going on, he also has a vision to a man named Ananias. And he says, "Ananias." And he says, "Yes, Lord." And he said, "Here's what I need you to do. I need you to go and find this man named Saul. And I need you to talk to him. I need you to go in there because he's going to be waiting on you." He's seen in a vision or a dream that a man is going to come to him so that he can receive his sight again. Now, if you put yourself in Ananias' place, what are you thinking? Exactly what he is. "Lord, I don't know if you remember who this man is. I do. He has authority from the chief priest to put everyone who follows Christ into prison or to put them to death. He can do whatever he wants. Lord, I don't know if you realize that, what's really going on down here." And sometimes we do that in our own life. "God, I don't know if you know what the reality is in this world. I don't know if you know what's really happening to our lives. But let me remind you, God, since you're not here, what's actually happening." Now, we wouldn't be so bold as to say that bluntly like that to God. But every time we ignore Him, every time we ignore what's going on in our life and the way He's leading us, and we don't listen to Him, we do the same or that very thing to Him. "I don't think you understand, God, what's happening." God says, "Yes, I do. You need to listen to me. You need to go because Saul needs salvation. Saul needs reconciliation to me, his father, to the Lord. He needs this, Ananias, and if you don't go, that's not going to happen. You need to go to him because Saul needs a new vision. He has a new dream in his life is what he needs, and you need to go." Another vision. The very next chapter, in chapter 10, Acts chapter 10, Cornelius has a vision. Cornelius is trying to worship God and he wants to do what's right and he's a good man and people have called him a righteous man, not God. God didn't say that, but men have said that about him. And so he's doing what he can. He's trying to worship correctly. And in a vision, an angel talks to him and says, "Your gifts, your prayers have come up as a memorial before God. God has heard you praying. And so what you need to do is you need to go and see this man named Simon, also called Peter, and he'll tell you what you need to do." At the same time, Peter, who would never welcome Cornelius ever, is having a vision or a dream, if you will, that God is revealing to him to quit looking at people the way he's looking at people. You need to have a bigger dream than the dream you have, Peter. Peter had a pretty good dream, didn't he? He had a dream of a reality, of a greater reality in Christ Jesus than in the law. But he wasn't ready, he wasn't willing to look at everybody being invited, that everybody could have the same dream in Jesus Christ. And so it needed to be revealed to Peter that he needed a bigger dream. a more inclusive dream that would encompass the entirety of the world, and he needed to go to a Gentile, and he needed to talk to a Gentile, and he needed to share the gospel message with him so that the reality would come to pass. Those visions that they were having were God's and not theirs. Paul in Acts chapter 18 had a vision. God spoke to him and said, "Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of those who are against you. Don't be afraid of those who are against truth. You keep preaching the truth. It doesn't matter what they think. You just keep preaching. You keep doing what I'm telling you to do." And in Acts chapter 26, Paul is before King Agrippa. He's already gone, and he's been before Felix, and he's been before Festus, and now he's going before Agrippa. And I love his words when he says, in his defense, he says, "I can't do anything but be faithful to the vision that was given to me by the Lord Himself." All of those things that I'm on trial for, all of those things that the Jews have claimed that I've done, all of those accusations that have been made against me, all of those things, King Agrippa, I'm going to tell you right now, I can't do anything but be faithful to the vision that the Lord Jesus Christ came to me. And he's talking about that day when he's traveling, and the Lord talked to him, and he blinded his sight until Ananias could come back and touch him and heal his sight. And that day when he said, "Why are you persecuting me? And who are you, Lord? I'm the Lord Jesus Christ, whom you're persecuting, whom you're against." And his life changed. That vision, that dream that he had changed when God revealed himself. And so before the king, before King Agrippa, he said, "I have a vision, a new dream revealed to me by the Lord, and I've changed. And this is what I want for everyone." And so we could stop and we could keep on talking about dreams. We could talk about all these visions, but that doesn't happen today. God doesn't speak to us in the same way that He did in days of old. He doesn't do things miraculously like that anymore. He doesn't come to us and wake us up. He doesn't write on walls in the night, or He doesn't make anything else. All of those other things we could talk about that He's done throughout the history of man, He doesn't do those things miraculously anymore. We know that. We know that those miracles were done, John chapter 20 and 30 and 31, when he said the Lord, he performed miracles, many other miracles and signs before his disciples that are not written in this book, but these are written that you might believe in him, and in believing might have life in his name. So we know that those miraculous signs, those visions, those anything that God did out of the ordinary or the normal, God did so that we would believe in the message that's being taught. 1 Corinthians 13. I'm going to read a couple of verses. In this chapter about the excellence of love, he talks about, in verse 8, he says, "Love never fails. But where there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. Where there are tongues, they will cease. Where there is knowledge, it will be done away with. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away with." And he's talking about the miraculous signs. And he's talking about the perfect being this, the perfectly revealed will of God. We know that. And so he's saying all of those signs, all of those visions that used to happen, those things, at some point very soon, those are going to be done away with. When we have the perfectly revealed will of God, all of that's going to be done away with. So today we live in a time where miracles don't happen. We live in a time where God does not speak to us in dreams or visions, but in His perfectly revealed will, which is our dream, because it's God's dream. We've been talking about church growth. We've been talking about God is the one who planned, God foretold, God demanded church growth. He wants His church to grow. He wants it to reach out into every part of the world so that all men might be saved. Reconciliation, that's what He has always wanted. That is, if you will, God's dream for this world is reconciliation. That's his vision to his people, is I want all men saved. I want everyone to be reconciled to me. In Galatians chapter 3, in Galatians chapter 3, Paul is talking to them, and he's talking about the promises through Abraham. In verses 16, he says, now the promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed, and he does not say, and to seeds, referring to many, but he says seed, referring to one. And who is that seed? Jesus Christ. What I'm saying, he says, is this: the law, which came 430 years later, does not invalidate a covenant previously ratified by God so as to nullify the promise. For if inheritance is based on law, is no longer based on a promise, but God has granted it to Abraham by means of a promise. In verse 29, the last verse, he says, and if you belong to Christ, then you're Abraham's descendants, heirs according to the promise. Here's the reality of what God wanted his people to know from the very beginning. We are children of promise. The seed that was promised to Abraham was fulfilled in Jesus Christ. And all the people are, they don't fully grasp, they don't understand. Joseph didn't understand. Jacob didn't understand. Isaac didn't understand. Abraham didn't understand all of those promises through those dreams or visions that they had. But God was revealing something to all mankind that he wanted all of us to understand. He wanted us to understand that a promise in Jesus Christ was going to change this world. Our dream is in reconciled, being reconciled to God our Father through Jesus Christ. He did it before this world ever began. Peter will say that in 1 Peter chapter 1, 18 and following. Hebrews chapter 12 talks about Mount Zion, where the faithful of God are welcomed. God's dream was never about people being lost, but people being brought in to a relationship, being reconciled to Him. And so when we start talking about dreams, God's dream, and not like we fall asleep at night and someone says, did you dream last night? But that strong desire, God's desire for us, for His people, has always been reconciliation. What is our dream? I know that we don't dream dreams like God revealed in years gone by, but what is your dream for your life and for your relationship with Jesus Christ? What kind of dream do you have? Look at this congregation. What is your dream for this church here in Seminole? 2 weeks ago, I was in the back with the youth group for a minute, and I started walking down the hallway. And the youth class is the far one on the end, but after you pass those doors of that classroom, you'll pass by three more classrooms. One, two, three, and turn the corner. And when you turn the corner, there are three more classrooms. And I walked down the hallway two Sunday mornings ago, and I counted our children in all six classrooms. You know how many children we had? Three children total in six classrooms. Is that the dream that God has for Seminole? Is that the dream that we have as a body here in Seminole for this body, God's Lord Jesus Christ's body in Seminole? Is that our dream? Is that our vision? Is that where we want to be? Are those the things that we think that is okay? I don't think so. And so we look and we go, what are we going to do? How do we change those things? What does God really want? And sometimes maybe we get a little scared or we're a little fearful. Maybe we don't want to make a commitment. Maybe we say things like, well, I don't know that I want to be there because there aren't any other young families. There aren't any other children. There aren't any of these things. And we make mistakes because we just don't understand. And I guess God's will is that I move somewhere else or I do something else rather than be here. And I know that we've been struggling with this. And I know I've had conversations with some of you, and I've had conversations the elders have. And we look and we go, if we don't do something, if we don't change our dream, what's going to happen? Because until we align our dreams with those of God's, our strong desires with those of God's, what's going to change? And so they made a decision. Our elders did a couple of weeks ago, that we're going to do everything that we can, and we're going to start with our young families, and we're going to get someone else here to begin working with them, with our young people. And so we called Josh and Naomi and asked them to come back. And so we look and we try to realize what we can do, and we make a commitment to them to coming in at least for a couple of years, to say we're going to do everything that we possibly can to have the same dream that God has, to be able to reach out to our families with young people, and we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that their dream, that they'll see the same dream that God has for our town here in Seminole, is to grow, is to introduce, is to reconcile more and more people back to God. Because that's what He wants. So bring them back to begin. And the second thing is this: the challenge from our elders, from us to you, to this congregation, is this. We need to make a commitment. This church needs to make a commitment, number one, of our time. Where is our time being spent? Too often we invest in time in so many things, but not in this, not in the Lord's body. And we're challenging you to begin looking at your time. And what are you doing for the kingdom here in Seminole? What are you doing for this church? In what way are you trying to unite the younger families or all of the families here in this church? What can we do? If you don't know what to do, ask one of the elders. Ask me. Ask someone else. We're going to get involved together. We need to start building those relationships again. We need to share a dream with this world that God has for them and their life. We need to start with our resources. And many of you are wonderfully giving individuals, not just monetarily, that's important, but in all the other aspects, your abilities, those are resources that maybe someone else doesn't have, that you're ready to start teaching. Maybe you're ready to do some other things and you just need a little bit of encouragement. I want to encourage you right now to step up and do and live the life that God has for you, the dream that He has for you in this church. So we're going to spend our time, our resources, and our love for this family. Here's the dream that God has: all men to be reconciled to Himself through Jesus Christ. That is not going to happen in Seminole, Oklahoma, unless you are involved. What are you going to do? What is your dream? And when so you have a conversation, you say, I had a dream last night about whatever. What about the conversations you're going to have this coming week? What kind of dreams are you going to share with the people in this church or outside this church? What kind of dreams are you going to share? What kind of dream are you going to choose to have? Is it to find favor with our Lord, with the Lord of all creation? You're going to have the dream to ready yourself to meet Him one day when He returns, to be reconciled to Him, to know where you are for eternity. That's what the world needs. That's what this church needs to be about. Let's dream a dream together that involves Jesus Christ in our life. Dream of a glory-filled church that honors and praises God in everything that we do, in the lives that we touch, in the focus of the life that we live, whether inside this building or out in the streets, in our homes, in our jobs, and all the things that we're involved in. Let's all have and share in this dream of changing our town. We can do that, because that's God's dream for us. He will empower us. He will empower us to do it if we're ready to let Him. So what is your dream in your life? Is it to serve Him? Is it to be reconciled to Him for all eternity? I hope so. How many people live around you? How many people do you know that need Christ in their life? You may be, as that old saying goes, the only Bible they'll ever have. What kind of dream do you have for them? This morning, the invitation from the Lord is yours. He's calling you, trying to reveal to you His dream for you. Won't you let Him do that today? If you need to respond to Him in a public way, we ask you to come right now while we stand and we sing together.
There is a place of